You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 2nd of July. Where does the West stand at this point? Some insight on Mike Conley and what we see in Summer League Day 1. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, a lot of geeky numbers, and hopefully making it a lot more fun for you to be a Jazz fan all season long and in the offseason, and there's no offseason for a true Jazz fan. Thanks very much for tuning in. Thanks for listening the last few days. We've rocketed up the iTunes ratings. We were in the top 40 yesterday, which is pretty high for us. Super appreciate it. We had 12 different Locked On Podcast Network shows that hit the iTunes ratings yesterday, so that was super cool. Thanks for all of you for tuning in. Appreciate it immensely. We are here daily for you each and every day with Locked On Jazz, so make sure we make it a part of your routine. You can just tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. You can get it on iTunes, on Google Podcast, on Stitcher, Spotify, Himalaya, whatever app you might use for your podcasting. All right, I got a chance yesterday to talk to some people with Memphis in town about Mike Conley. Mike Conley reportedly has been traded to the Jazz. Nothing's been official. I know we keep talking about the July 6th date, by the way, but I'm not certain. The way the league rules work, both Kyle Korver and Jay Crowder, who are reportedly in the steal, have to go through physicals. I don't think they have to report to like the 11th. So there's a chance that, you know, if you're waiting for the Mike Conley press conference, it might not happen on the 6th. So just be aware of that there are some things that could actually wait a little bit before that happens. I thought there were some interesting things. I didn't really per se put microphones in front of anyone or say they were going to be on the record. So if you don't mind, I'm going to leave some names out of it. These people obviously know him well. And the first thing is that, you know, not surprising on a guy that just won Sportsmanship and Teammate of the Year, just an unbelievable dude, is the reaffirming thing across everybody that you talk to about Mike Conley. An unbelievable dude. Now, I think there's a real value here because I believe that Donovan Mitchell wants to be that guy. Donovan Mitchell wants to be a superstar and a great guy. And the world doesn't necessarily show you that you can do both those things. There aren't a lot. It doesn't mean you have to be a bad guy, but most superstars wear out somewhere in the process and get tired from all the media, get tired from everything that's taking place, and or their marketing team or Nike or whomever gives them a little bit of an edge. That there's a villain role that they eventually kind of go grab. The fact of the matter is Donovan is going to now have somebody who's going to show him that you can be that good a guy and be a star and finish your career maintaining that level of excellence as a person. That you don't need to add that edge. You don't need to. So I think there's incredible value there. On the other end, for all we know, Mike Conley's going to tell Donovan, like, get out of a small market and go get somewhere where you get recognition so that you can become an all-star, because I never got to be an all-star in a small market. Like, I don't want to, like, be Pollyanna-ish here and just tell you everything's going to be perfect, because I think that, in truthfulness, I don't know Mike Conley and I don't know his personal feelings on being in Memphis, but I do know that everybody talks to him as just being a great dude, deeply involved in the community, wonderful to deal with, fabulous in the locker room. That, before anyone ever talks basketball about Mike Conley, that's what they talk about. Then you have to get them to go talk basketball. It's interesting that that's the number one thing about Conley whenever someone wants to talk about it. Now, maybe the basketball is obvious to everyone, and this is the insight that these people have about him because they've been around him in the locker rooms and the rest of us haven't, and so that's what they share first. But universally across the board, everybody who wants to talk about Mike Conley talks about that first. The second thing is when they talk about Conley, I thought this was really interesting, was how brilliantly he manages a game. The comment I got from the guys who'd coached him was that he will play the game, work the game, set up Donovan, work his teammates the whole game through, and then when it's time for the fourth quarter, he will be the biggest beep-de-beep to make sure that he carries his team to a win late in games. I thought it was a really interesting kind of veteran approach. Now, his clutch numbers have not been particularly good the last few years. He was a great clutch player, and in the last few seasons, as he has been a little less good. Now, maybe he hasn't had as good of players around him, and Marc Gasol hasn't been quite as good, or Zach Randolph left. I don't necessarily know the reasons why. Maybe he's being asked to carry a bigger burden. I'm not sure. But the comment from the coaches that coached him were that he gets late in games, he gets the ball, and he is just a beast late. Now, last year in the clutch, he was pretty good. 44% from the field in the clutch is really, really good. He also went to the free throw line 55 times. He hit only 13 of 44 threes, 29%. Probably most of those are off the bounce. The year prior, he was a 40% shooter in the clutch and 40% from three, which is filthy. The year prior, he was 28% in the clutch and 25%. So that's really maybe the comment what I'm making. There was in 13-14, he had one of the great, in 14-15, he had two of the greatest clutch years you'll see. Over those 2 years, he shot 50% from the field and 45% from three. He was maybe the most clutch player in the NBA in 13-14 and 14-15 that there's been. Last year was really good, but that gives the Jazz something. You know, the Jazz have not been good late close. They have not had a lot of answers. Late close last year, which is the final 2 minutes of a game within a possession or two, he shot just 33%. He's one of 13 from three. Again, those are probably all contested off-the-bounce threes, particularly on the team he was on last year. Nobody's going to give him another look. Go back to those 2 years I was talking about, 13-14, 14-15. He was, again, probably the best late-game player in the league. He shot about 44% and about hit 10 of 25 from three, so 40% from three over that two-year span. I mean, he really was the premier clutch player in the league. Now, that was a while ago, so his game may not be the same, but it's in him. He's had that experience. He knows how to do that. And it was interesting talking to these people who basically said, hey, this guy will manage the game, play it, and then he is a beep-de-beep when it gets to the fourth quarter, and he is going to absolutely carry you late game stuff. And that's good because, frankly, the Jazz have not been late game, and frankly, Ricky Rubio was awful. Ricky Rubio was truly awful in late game situations, and it was a major problem the last few years. It's really the reason why I thought the Jazz had to move past Rubio more than any other out there, was truly the fact that of what he was in the clutch. The Jazz last year were 15-18 in close games. Games were decided by five or less within five in the final 5 minutes. That's not great. The year prior, we were 16-13, so we've been about 500 in that time period. While being a much better than 500 team, you're not going to, you know, Denver was 31-15 last year. That they were really, really, really remarkable. Memphis last year was 19-28, which hard to tell. They just were not a very good basketball team, so I don't know what we take away from that. But, you know, you start to take this one down a little bit, and you get into the final few minutes of games and things of that nature, and some of these numbers are on this is where the Rubio stuff, that it's just going to be an enormous, enormous upgrade for the Jazz in that regard. So in the regular season this last year, yes, we still actually have a phone that rings in our house. I know, it's stunning. In the regular season last year, when Rubio played in the clutch, the Jazz were 7-14. If you take Rubio into the final 3 minutes of a game within 3 points, I think it was. I'm kind of doing this on the fly. I don't remember these numbers off the top of my head. I might have suppressed them, frankly. Rubio, actually, his numbers, his shooting numbers were good. Personally, the team was 4-9 in games in which within the final 3 minutes were within 3 points with Rubio on the floor. They won most of their clutch games in games where Rubio wasn't on the floor late. Final 3 minutes of a game within 5 points and Rubio played, we were 6-13 last year. You know, with Joe, we were 13-15. With Donovan, we were 13-14. With Rudy, we were 13-16. But with Rubio, in the 19 games that he played in the clutch, we were 6-13. So that's an area where a considerable upgrade, and talking to coaches is one of the first things that they brought up. 4th of July celebration going on at our friends at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Blake and the Murdochs, they've been such a pleasure for me to get to know over the time. The Murdoch family, 90 plus years in Utah. Absolutely, you know, kind of built into their who they are to make sure that they are bringing Utah this value and giving Utah the best of what they have to offer and giving you that experience that you know you've been touched by the Murdoch family. And then the Hyundai brand for me has been great. I mean, we not only is have we bought Hyundais and have the Santa Fe, but driving all the latest models, they've just been amazing. 0% APR for 60 months right now on Hyundai's award-winning SUVs. So the Kona, the Tucson, the Santa Fe that we bought. Celebrate your freedom from interest at Murdoch Hyundai during the 4th of July sales event and let freedom reign at Murdoch, at the Murdoch events. So a lot of fun going on there. And then after July, they'll have all sorts of celebration with the Days of 47 parade going on. For the entire month of July, you can receive $500 Visa gift card when you finance your Murdoch vehicle through Golden West Credit Union. So there'll be a bunch of good stuff there going on at Murdoch. $500 Visa gift card when you finance your Murdoch vehicle through Golden West Credit Union. I wanted to take some time and kind of look at where we are in the West over the next few days, take a few of these teams and just kind of analyze them. We're going to do it alphabetically. Obviously, we're all waiting on Kawhi. If he goes to the Lakers, they're the dominant favorite. If not, I don't know who the dominant favorite is. I don't think there is one. I think Denver might be the favorite. Utah will be up there in the conversation. So let's start alphabetically. Kind of, we'll look at the Western Conference, where everybody is. And give a quick take on. So Dallas, the real question on them is going to be Kristaps Porzingis and when he's available to come back. Luka's their point guard for all intents and purposes. Their backup point guard is going to be Jalen Brunson, who was pretty good. They added Tim Hardaway Jr. through some over the last year, and they have him as an inefficient scorer. Their small forward right now is Dorian Finney-Smith, who's unsigned, but they have Dwight Powell, so they may start Powell, Porzingis, Luka, Hardaway, and maybe Brunson, and you're playing it in that manner, and then giving Luka the ball as your point forward. Their bench is solid with Seth Curry, Courtney Lee, Justin Jackson, the third-year player out of North Carolina, Maxi Kleber, who they've signed. They're good. And the real question on them is, what is Luka's second-year jump and how healthy is Kristaps Porzingis? I don't know how they defend. They don't have a single good defensive player on that roster, and I'm not sure that Luka or Porzingis are interested in it, though Porzingis, with his height and length, have been fairly decent defensive players so far. The other aspect there will simply be, you know, whether – I mean, Hardaway's going to be able to create opportunities. Luka's going to create opportunity in Kristaps. They're not going to have a hard time getting looks and getting shots. It's whether they are able to put up much resistance. you know, if all they have Rick Carlisle is a great coach. If all goes well, maybe that's a playoff team right away with Kristaps Porzingis. Though Kristaps does not have a great win record, and I think it'll be interesting to see what he comes back at. Dallas, Denver right now is generally unchanged. Trey Lyles is a free agent. They still have, I think, a mid-level exception to use. But they are unchanged, and they are good. And Michael Porter Jr. is probably their big addition to things. I think Bol Bol may sit out the year, and they may have, as other than Seth Curry, the best player in the West, Steph Curry, excuse me, the best player in the Western Conference in Nikola Jokic. And that, in many ways, should probably play them as the favorite. They gave Jamal Murray a max contract the other day, which feels like it's too much, but he would have gotten offered it by somebody in restricted free agency next year, so there's no need to make him go through that and sour the relationship that they have. But that team's coming back as Will Barton, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, Paul Millsap, Nikola Jokic with a solid Monte Morris, one of the most underrated bench players, Malik Beasley, who's developing well, Torrey Craig, Michael Porter Jr. steps in there, probably as a backup four to Millsap if he's ready, and Mason Plumlee. Otherwise, they might go add a backup four. There aren't a lot of very good backup fours. Frankly, we need one right now. Jamichael Green is out there. Would be a great pickup by Denver. I don't think we can get him on the minimum. Darius Miller is out there, who I kind of like for us. Wilson Chandler's out there. I don't think that Denver's going to be re-signing him, and I'm not a huge Wilson Chandler fan unless he comes in at the min. Dante Cunningham is out there as well. That little note is that Philadelphia has offered a 5-year, $168 million contract extension to Ben Simmons. All right, Golden State, who we all just quickly dismissed, but they have the best player in the Western Conference in Steph Curry. As of right now, they are Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell in the backcourt with Klay Thompson out. Draymond Green and Kevon Looney as their frontcourt and no small forward. I mean, they are still, you know, what they're doing with D'Angelo Russell, the word is they signed him to trade him. We'll see. But, you know, they're crazy thin. Eric Paschal, who they'll sign, Alonzo McKinney, Jonas Derebko is a free agent. Damon Jones will be back in a healthy next year, but I don't know that that's a playoff team, is really the story there. For Houston, they made some nice moves this last week. They basically have run this team back together. Chris Paul, Austin Rivers, who's really become a good player. I think Austin Rivers has become kind of, was a joke for a little while because of his time in LA. And it's interesting he went back to Chris Paul. I think he actually has got a strong enough personality to handle Chris Paul, which a lot of guys don't. Eric Gordon is back again. Super good. But worth watching age wise. I mean, he's like a lot of Jazz players. He's at 30. You're never quite sure. Amon Shumpert's still a free agent and out there. We'll see what they do with him. But they're running it. They're running back Clint Capella, PJ Tucker, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Chris Paul with a bench of Austin Rivers, Gerald Green, Daniel House, and then they've got both Kenneth Freed and Nene are free agents right now, so they've got to find themselves a backup center, which isn't that hard to do. So Houston's back. I think we'll forget about them all season long. We'll forget to talk about them as an upper echelon Western Conference team. They should be talked about in the top four of the West all offseason. We'll forget to do that. We'll talk about Utah. We'll talk about Denver. We'll talk about everybody else. We'll forget about Houston incorrectly as time continues. The Clippers are waiting. They guaranteed the rest of the contract of Lou Williams yesterday, which was an interesting move. The Clippers didn't have to guarantee that payment for 2021 until next summer, but they just decided to do it anyway, which is pretty classy. It's also only $8 million. So I don't know. You know, they made a deal yesterday and picked up Mo Harkless. So they're right now, they're interesting in this sense. If they don't get Kawhi Leonard, they want to have cap space. I don't know what they'll entirely do with it. I don't know if they'll go down the DeMarcus Cousins road. But what they do have is just that incredible depth again. So Patrick Beverley, Landry Shamet, Lou Williams, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is your four guards. Danilo Gallinari, Mo Harkless, and question mark as your three forwards. Montrezl Harrell and Zubac is a free agent. We'll see whether they re-sign him or whether they go down the DeMarcus road. It's interesting. They're going to be again, if they don't get Kawhi, we're going to dismiss them. But it's a similar team to the team that they had a year ago that just played really, really hard, got a lot of things done, made the playoffs, gave the Warriors a good fight, and have a great coach in Doc Rivers, and are probably, again, a little bit better than anyone realizes. All right, that kind of takes us through a few of the teams in the West. We'll do Lakers and Memphis and Minnesota in their unique situation right now, and New Orleans and somewhat of OKC. I don't know if you saw it yesterday. I missed it. Alec Burke signed with OKC yesterday. Happy for AB that he found himself a gig. And Rodney, by the way, re-signed with Portland. We'll talk about Portland as well. So all of those things are worth talking about tomorrow. We'll do that. Spencer Nelson, our good friend, former Utah State Aggie, great, spent some time at Jazz camps and such, and has been on the Jazz broadcast a bunch, is in the financial advising world with a really interesting group. And let him tell you about his teammates and what he's got going on at IronGate Global Advisors. I want to tell you about IronGate Global Advisors, a financial group out of Salt Lake City, small shop that understands your journey, aren't pushing products on you, and have a strategy, direction, and process. I found out about them from Spencer Nelson, former Utah State great, who, by the way, has an MBA, accounting and finance background degrees, and worked Wall Street and private equity. And he tells me about the personnel. Brian is the chief investment officer.
Brian's a long-term investor, Warren Buffett disciple with a proven track record of active management. He views investing as not trading stocks, but buying pieces of businesses that he believes in. He's focused on not getting caught up in what's hot today or tomorrow, but doing the research, looking 1, 3, 5, even 10 years out with a very patient, methodical approach.
Couple that with Brett and his longtime options background, and you have a versatile group. It's IronGate Global Advisors. To find out more about IronGate Financial, give Spencer a call, 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334, or email him at spencer@igga.com. Anytime we're talking investing, understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. All right, let's go to Summer League yesterday. We've got the 3 second-round draft picks. I don't want to make too big a deal out of day one. Frankly, nobody was very good last night. The Jazz are running. Feels like the Jazz are running a lot more stuff than anyone else, and they're having a hard time getting to their spots, and then that's dragging them down a little bit on the offensive end as they try to learn what they're doing. Unlike some of the teams in Summer League who just kind of come out and open it up and just, you know, they just play, and that's probably easier for some of these players in a short period of time. The Jazz players look like they were thinking a bit last night. So there were 2 things last night. We're all focused on the 3 second-round draft picks, and I'll touch on them in a second. I do think that Isaiah Cousins is someone to keep an eye on. He's long. He's played in the G League. He could be our 3rd point guard with the Jazz waving Howell Neto. A lot of people are asking me of whether the Jazz are interested in bringing Neto back. I think Neto's interested in finding himself a team. If he doesn't, I guess that's a possibility. But quite frankly, on the other side of things is the fact that the Jazz can't really believe that Howell Neto is going to stay healthy. Right? At some point, you have to just realize that what we've experienced the last few years, which is a really good basketball player who's completely solid and able to make a contribution, but can't stay healthy, is very well might be who he is. And so I think that the Jazz may just decide that, you know what, it's time to find somebody else at that position, and not in a, you know, just, you know, not in any, I mean, everyone loves Howell and knows he's a good player. The health thing is just prohibitive to putting him and banking on him for a season. The aspect to Isaiah Cousins is that he's been in the system. He's long. He's kind of a nice player. He didn't look great last night, frankly. I was a little surprised. But he's 6'4". He was a second-round draft pick. So he's really very similar to the guys we're talking about. He played at Oklahoma for 4 years. He was the second-to-last pick of the 2016 draft. He's got three G League seasons underneath him at this point. And so, you know, he's an all right player. He might be your third point guard on this team. I would suspect he gets invited to camp. So I think he's important to watch. I didn't think he was great last night. He didn't hit his little floater. He didn't seem to have he fit into that mix of guys who I would say at times last night it felt like they just kind of almost were overthinking to what was taking place, and that prohibited them from playing well. That would be kind of what jumped out to me. He averaged 15 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists in the G League last year, playing 31 minutes. So he knows how to play, knows the Jazz systems, knows what they do. And so I think that that's what you'll get. 3-point shooting. Last season, he was at 39.5, and the year before, he was at 40. So the numbers say he should be all right. Let's watch him and see what his release is on the shot. The other one was Tony Bradley and Willie Reed, who both could be the third center this year. We'd like Tony Bradley to really be the backup center, but I think Ed Davis has that role, and so Tony is playing to prove that he could be viable. That was an important matchup against Ivan Rabb, who has shown he can be a viable NBA player and a rotation NBA player. I think of Ivan Rabb as an NBA rotation player. I had some people after the game last night who told me they thought maybe otherwise and weren't as high on him. And I thought Tony did some things well, and that the other times there were the moments where you just wished he progressed. I think I heard Bowler and Thurl say that Tony Bradley is like the youngest guy still on our summer league team, which gives you an idea of that he still has a huge amount of development that can take place for him. In regards to the 3 second round draft picks, a lot of people are making a big deal about Brantley. Last night he was fine. I think the Jazz hope is that one of the 3 guys can make the roster, and maybe the other 2 guys are on 2-way contracts, and that they progress and that they get comfortable playing. They all are taking a really, really big jump. And I think you've got to be clear about how big a jump that is from their low-level college to what they're doing in a pro game that's, even just a summer league game. I think we saw that. The kid out of Yale only it was 0-for-3, but he was non-impactful. I mean, that was more than anything else. Brantley was impactful. You know, when he's on the floor, he and his 8 fouls was impactful. He made some highlight plays. I'm not a bit like that doesn't move my meter. Wright Foreman's crazy fast. He's a waterbag fast movement guy. He turned the corner on one, but he's really struggled to shoot, and he looked really small in last night's game. That was just, on the measurables, he jumped out to me as looking small. He is. He's a water bug, bona fide scorer, but he's small. So that's my quick take on those guys. I'm not, I'm watching them closely. I'm interested in them. I'm not high-hoping them. I don't have huge hopes for guys that are that are the guys that are drafted in the 50s play in the NBA very much. And if they do play in the NBA, I think they play the way Isaiah Cousins might play next year, which is that they were in the G League for 3 years. They develop their skills, become mature, and then you can just rely on them for 10, 15 minutes a night if you have to in an emergency circumstance where somebody's injured. I think our backup point guard search is interesting. I'll leave it on this. That market is diminishing. I heard last night that Archie Diacono is not going to be available from Chicago, which is too bad. I really liked him. I think the backup point guard, frankly, for us is Donovan. I think Donovan's going to play when Conley goes off. Donovan's going to take the ball for those 12 minutes a night, 15 minutes, maybe actually more. It's probably 18 minutes a night. So somebody's got to play some of those minutes. We got to get somebody. But I think it's going to be some of Donovan. I don't know if it's 18 minutes of Donovan, because that's 18 minutes that he is not playing with Conley, and you probably want the two of them together for more than just 14 minutes a night. I think you have to, actually, because they're going to play the first 7 together, of the first third and the final 5 together. So they're going to play at least 20 minutes a night together. And so Donovan could play point for the other 14 minutes. You don't want Conley playing 34. So somebody else is going to have to play some point guard. But I do think it's Donovan. I think you're trying to find somebody who maybe has a point guard backup or maybe is big and strong and can play next to Donovan for some of those minutes and maybe take over the point for 4 to 6 minutes a night in that realm. Maybe somebody who can score a little bit. But these are not easy to find right now. You know, Jerian Grant is somebody I've looked at who couldn't get off the bench in Orlando last year and is not a good point guard. And teams' offenses have never been good, but I like him because of the fact that he can – he's big and long, and he can defend next to Donovan. I looked at Shabazz Napier, but now he's in Minnesota. I don't know what they're going to do with Tyus Jones, but he's going to get more than what we can offer. So the point guard market is getting slim. I mean, there are not a lot of run through the free agent point guards. I'm doing this off Roto World right now, and this is a really quick scan. Trey Burke. Probably not our answer. Alex Caruso, Rajon Rondo. Everybody loves Caruso. I don't think he's coming in at the minimum. Tyus Jones, Jared Bayless. Bayless might be interesting. He's evolved. Emmanuel Mudiay might be interesting. He had a pretty good year last year. He hit a lot of mid-range shots. He's been an incredibly inefficient, poor pick-and-roll player, but he showed some signs last year in the first half of last season. He was really good on the pick-and-roll before the Knicks tanked and played with terrible players. So that might be a little interesting. And he did hit a high level of mid-range shots and corner threes last year. He just has not hit the off-the-bounce three. He still takes poor shots, so maybe he could develop. Jerian Grant, I mentioned. Raymond Felton, who's getting probably a little too old. TJ McConnell's floating around there. I would assume he gets more than the minimum. Sacramento, I like Yogi Ferrell, but he's at $3 million. I'm not sure how we get that done. But they now have Corey Joseph and De'Aaron Fox and Frank Mason. So I don't know what entirely they're planning. Jeremy Lin's a free agent. Chasen Randall's a free agent out of Washington. That's it. So that's why a little bit I find myself kind of looking at the second tier. Guys that might be shooting guards that can then help you out a little bit. Nick Stauskas has never been very good. David Nwaba is a free agent shooting guard. I don't think he's a minimum player. That's what we have. We have the minimum contract right now. And I don't think he can handle it all, so I'm not sure that's a particularly good answer. C.J. Williams was okay in Minnesota a little bit, but, you know, that's you're talking about a minimum level player there. Ian Clark's a free agent. We know him. I think we know exactly what he is. At this point, you're now getting guys that are playing off the ball with Donovan. They're probably not helping you out for your 3 minutes, the 3 to 8 minutes a night. And if somebody gets hurt, it's longer. So that's a tough little marketplace for the Jazz right now in that backup point guard and having to waive Raul Neto yesterday. All right, that is Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. Appreciate you. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks to Iron Gate Global Advisors and Spencer Nelson. Thanks to Murdoch Hyundai.